the Yak Babies, sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
You are listening to Yak Babies, a new episode this week. This time, your friends, personal pals, me, Dave Durr, and Brick are talking about what we're reading. Nice holdover from the previous page count and book hockey days. We're always talking about sort of our current reading fixations or habits. So we'll discuss that. So, Brick, why don't you start this time? What are you reading?
This month I read a book called Pussy by Howard Jacobson. Mm-hmm. As you will see from the cover of the book, it is a baby with Donald Trump's head holding a big boobed Barbie doll. Mm. I got it for Christmas. I kind of laughed at the cover. I didn't think I would actually read it. But then it turns out the author, Howard Jacobson, got a man booker a few years back, and that intrigued me. He got it in 2010 for his book, The Finkler Question, which I haven't read, but I think that pedigree was enough to have me give it a shot.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little of Kurt Vonnegut, but maybe a little more overwritten. What it is basically this fantastic allegorical retelling of how a creature such as Donald Trump could become president. Mm-hmm. Right. So it retells the world kind of as this hyper-capitalistic oligarchy that sort of has separate spheres of money versus politics, and how one's real and how one's for show and all that stuff. How the rise of things like Twitter led to different sort of values making their way to the top of power. It's very self-aware. It's very smart. But I don't know. There's not a lot there. Like, the criticism is obvious, yeah. I think. So it's not peeling back a curtain to show you anything you don't already know. It's interesting.
Right.
It's entertaining, I suppose.
Is it about Trump? Like, is he a character in it?
No, it's about a...
But the cartoon on the front and the back, I mean, that's...
I mean, it's
clearly Trump.
Yeah, his name is Fracassus.
Okay.
Fracassus Origen. He's the son of an emperor, but the emperor... he's a grand duke, not an emperor, I'm sorry. But he's a son of a aristocracy. No one likes him, but he rises to power anyway just because that's his trajectory, and he's sort of bullish about it. As a baby, he really likes Nero, things like that. It's well written. There's a lot of good little bits. But, you know, again, like, anyone that likes Trump wouldn't sniff this book, and anyone that doesn't is going to kind of...
Like, nothing's going to change for them.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I don't know. It's very hard to evaluate it, you know? I guess it is cleverly... I don't even want to say it's satirical, because it's so on the nose that...
Right.
But, you know, it's a satirical dystopia, but it doesn't reveal anything that, you know, the things that it points out about society that sucks are the things we already know about society that sucks. It's not, you know, it's not like effectively lampooning anything, which is not necessarily a failure of the book. It's just our society is like, you know, there's jokes all the time that we're in a post-satire society, but I mean, we really fucking are.
Yeah.
So it's hard to sort of. I think if this book had come out about a president 15 or 20 years ago, it would have been amazing. But because the people at the top of the power in our country and our world are so buffoonish and clownish and almost beyond reproach and mockery at this point, because, you know, you can list on two full hands, things about Donald Trump that would have derailed any other leader 15 years ago.
Things that have.
Or have. So, I don't know. It really just kind of depressed me. As the book went on, it became a little more clear about the different character analogs to real life, most especially Manafort and Clinton and Steve Bannon. I don't know. I guess it's worth reading if you're into political satire.
Yeah.
Or if you like this author, I suppose. It's certainly well written and it's entertaining, but...
Yeah.
I found myself more or less depressed. The only other thing worth mentioning is the ending feels really rushed.
Right.
So either he wrote this book incredibly quickly, you know, in the span of a year, or it had begun a little earlier and then took a drastic turn, including the title change at the Access Hollywood thing.
Wait, what? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, is that where that comes from, the title?
The Grab 'Em by the Pussy stuff.
What was the original title?
I have no idea. This is just me. This is my guess.
Gotcha.
Because either that or he cranked out this book in 6 months.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't feel rushed.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of the last chapter, last chapter sort of feels like there was another ending, and then Trump became president, so they had to sort of write in...
like the wah-wah ending.
Yeah,
like,
so it's basically a wah-wah ending.
Right.
It's just called The End of Days. The last chapter is...
it's just a long scream.
It's two pages. You know, it says, though they were frightened to disrupt the stillness, the yesterday men and women of Fracassus's diatribes, the educated, the knowledgeable, the sad, the losers, the metropolitan retards, dared to let hope penetrate their bunkers. It had all been a fiction. Even Fracassus didn't seem to believe any of it. Really. All men have some goodness in them, don't they? Let it only be an inadvertent mote blown out to someone else's eye. It was a salutary warning. Fracassus had sent to frighten them out of their complacency. This thing could happen. I'm behind you. Mind your backs.
Yeah, that sounds like
it's like this, like, it's an attack on him, but also, like, sort of an apology. I don't think it didn't fit the rest of the book. It seemed like it was trying to insert some sort of hopefulness and purpose to something that was really just sort of entropic and horrible. And
well, and also that sense of, like, oh, like...
fuck.
Yeah, like no one believed this was going to happen, so, like, well, Jesus, now I have to, like, address that somehow in this book.
It's
like,
yeah, so...
this is kind of weird.
It would be very interesting to see if there's another ending somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
That also looks kind of like... and it kind of has the feel of, like, a cheap advanced copy. Is that... did it come out in paperback like this, or...
Did it come out a couple years ago
in hardcover?
It couldn't have. It's
the copyright is 2017, right?
The copyright is 2017, and there's no way that at least the second half of this book wasn't written concurrently with the latter stages of the campaign.
Right, okay.
Because it's just too... like, there's references to Russia, there's references to the grabbing by the pussy stuff.
So no surprise it's kind of rushed, then. And Aaron, I remember you talking about a nonfiction book that came out earlier, maybe last year, a couple of months after the election, that felt rushed too. Like after
the Naomi Wolf, The Nose on which was like
probably a lot of those out there.
Yeah, I think that was sort of like, what can we do right now to, like, figure this out, or like do something positive, right? And just throw some ideas together, and it's good enough.
Yeah.
And again, that book was, like, nowhere near her, like, revolutionary work, like No Logo, but still it was a satisfying read, and it felt necessary. But, yeah, totally. I think things are just, like, panicking and trying to do something.
It's probably easier to do that with nonfiction than with fiction.
Totally. You can recycle, like, things
you've written. Yeah, it felt very out of place in this book. It sort of dragged me, even though at no part ever reading this are you not 100% aware that it is...
yeah,
it is referencing Donald Trump. It still felt so kind of entwined with reality at that last part that it was a frustrating ending.
Yeah,
are people talking about this book?
Not that I've
yeah, because I never heard of it until you showed it to me.
Yeah, I mean I thought it was like some joke book. My brother gave it to me for Christmas. I mean, obviously the cover is funny, right?
Sure.
So obviously saw that, I was like, that's hilarious, and bought it. But it seems like the cover's kind of a cash grab, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right. Who put it out?
I've never heard of them. FSC?
FSC?
Yeah.
First Sexual Congress.
Probably.
Hmm. Oh, it's vintage.
Oh.
So it's a Penguin imprint. Yeah, I don't know what FSC is, but it's an imprint of vintage, which is a Penguin imprint. So, I mean, and again, the author, Man Booker's no...
yeah,
that's a real prize.
Yeah.
And he's a very strong writer. It's pretty flawless in how it's written.
Yeah.
And constructed, and especially considering the time that must have been written in a very short time period. Most of the book doesn't feel rushed, with the exception of that two page ending. But even then, it feels like there was another ending, and like we got the Blade Runner director's cut.
Right.
But I'm going to go ahead and not recommend this book.
He's British. Does it feel, when you're reading it, like there's some distance there? Like he has a sort of a outsider's perspective to it?
A little bit, but not really, because it doesn't mention countries. The book's British because it's something UK. So, and if you want the Man Booker, he has to be British.
Right. Until recently.
But, oh, that's true. They changed that.
Yeah.
A little bit, but it feels... I don't know. It feels like, you ever read any Voltaire, right? Like, he's not actually talking about a country, but you can tell it's kind of that, like, above it kind of thing. It's like that. That's a weird pull, but it feels like that.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of people from not the UK, but Irish people missing the point of the US or getting things wrong. I want to start a new podcast about that movie, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I haven't seen it yet.
I hated it so much that I want to dedicate the rest of my life to talking about how much I hate it.
Oh, really? I wanted to see it.
Yeah. So see it, and then we can talk about
how bad it is.
Okay. Or if I, you know, how good it is and how I'm wrong.
Was it done by people outside?
Martin McDonagh, he's an Irish filmmaker and screenwriter. But I just like, I'm obsessed with it. I want to start a podcast like why I hate the movie.
Okay, I'll watch it then.
Look forward to the Yak Baby sub podcast, Why I Hate Three Billboards.
Three Billboards Outside My Butthole. So, stemming off that, I feel like the what you said about, you know, satire doesn't work anymore is right on. And the point, I guess, or the proof of that is that the Fire and Fury book is the one that people are talking about, right? Like, the only thing people will talk about is things that actually give some even, you know, nebulous or sort of skeptical insider information about the Trump White House. Like,
yep.
That's all that matters, is the reality of what's happening. That's what people want to talk about. And I and fair. Like, that's why. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not... satire requires a certain degree of... not necessarily monoculture, but accepted
narrative.
Decorum. You know, there has to be... society has to have this veneer on it,
right,
that satire can pull back. And it's so, like, just everything is so fucking raw now. Like, we know things faster than the press does sometimes.
Right.
Right? Because this, you know, we get it straight away on Twitter or wherever, and the press still vets things, which they ought to do.
Right.
So a lot of that just isn't there anymore. And I think it's just, everything's so chaotic.
Yeah.
That there's no...
and I just want to hear about the P-tape. Like, I just want to hear...
we know it's real. I've been saying it's real. We're going to see it.
Right. And it won't matter. But, like, that's...
it won't matter.
But. That's the only thing that matters is, like, those details. Like, the sort of... the distance of satire or literary fiction is, like, useless in this situation.
Yeah, it's sad. I think we can have a whole thing about satire someday.
So yeah.
What are you guys reading?
Dave?
Well, I'm reading about... I think it's 14 books right now, various story collections, including two compilations. And I'm doing that because I don't know if you Yak Babies have this problem, but I find it really difficult to read through one writer's story collection, like the same writer's story again and again and again, like consecutively.
Interesting.
You do not have that problem?
No.
No. You either?
Not if I like the stories.
Huh.
Mm. Important caveat, yeah. If I don't like it, then I'll stop.
Well, sure, yeah. Right. I have a couple of exceptions.
But that's not true with a novel for me. If I don't like a novel, I will probably still finish it.
Right.
If I don't like a story collection, I will stop, or I will skip through and find ones that look more interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you can stop reading a story collection easier than a novel, because we've talked about that. You and I both have a thing where, and I'm working on it too, where you find it hard to stop reading a book once you start it, even if I hate it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a weird, really
unpleasant. I haven't really had that problem with story collections. I don't know why, if I just see them differently or what.
Mm. Yeah. So, story collections I'm reading. I mean, I can't even think of all what they are now. One of them is Toby Wolff's, and you listeners out there, in a future episode, we're going to be talking about Tobias Wolff's Hunters in the Snow and Bullet in the Brain. So if you want to read those stories in advance of our discussion, you go do that. Ann Beattie, Kevin Barry, an Irish writer who I enjoy immensely. In fact, one of our former personal pals moved to, is it Sligo or Sligo?
Sligo.
Sligo, where Kevin Barry is from.
Did he meet him yet?
I'm not sure if he's met him yet.
I don't think so. Get on that. You're listening.
Definitely get on that. I mean, he moved there because Kevin Barry is from there. He likes Kevin Barry so much. It's really creepy,
That's
actually.
That's not why he moved there.
No. yeah. Laurie Moore.
I believed you.
Yeah.
He would have, but he had other reasons.
Right. So, yeah, and then... as I was doing this, I opened my copy of Coast of Chicago and reread Pet Milk, a story that we talked about on an earlier segment a couple of weeks ago. And then I found myself opening that book to the beginning and then just reading all the way through that.
Right.
So I put aside the other 13 books and just reread Coast of Chicago again in its entirety consecutively. And then... I read individual stories from that again.
Okay.
So I've read Pet Milk 3 times since I've read any other author's one, you know, single story.
Yeah.
Because that book just blows me away.
Yeah.
And then so when I was done with that, I started trying to read through a collection from Amy Bender called The Girl in the Flammable Skirt, which I read maybe 15 years ago and really liked.
I think I've read that. I read one of her collections.
This time through, like reading it after Stuart Dybbuk, it was like her stories are like, my dad woke up this morning and his stomach was gone and now he looks like a donut. And my mom was pregnant and she gave birth to my grandmother.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, okay.
Jokes.
You know, yeah. I mean, not jokes. There's stuff going on under the surface, but like, I really didn't like it. And I don't know if it's because I read Dybbuk before that or what, but you know, the three of us talk often about books that we really like at one point in our lives and then reread, you know, a decade or so later and our opinions have done like a total 180.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting sort of phenomenon to me because, you know, not a single word in that book has changed in the last 15 years. So obviously I'm the one who's changed. Yeah. And I think it's interesting to kind of explore how I've changed and like how that affects my reading of that book or, you know, whatever book in question.
Right. Well, there's also something to be said there about tone juxtaposition too. The Stuart, the Ghost of Chicago is such a specific feeling and jumping to a kind of magical realist or absurdist kind of tone, like it would be like brushing your teeth and then drinking orange juice, right? It's just like, it's not going to.
Well, I guess, but I don't know. That's kind of why I do like to skip around so much because outside of a collection like Dybbuk's, it's like the same kind of tone over and over is not a good effect for me yet.
Maybe it's the same to the power of that collection that it's just like it feels.
It could be,
piece and you want to just live in that world.
Yeah.
Which
I mean, there are, you know, I wish that I had my name on that book cover.
Oh, absolutely.
Close to Chicago. I mean, maybe any book in the world. It's just, so.
I will never not be jealous of that ability.
Yeah.
And jealous, but in awe is what I mean. Like, and I absolutely would 100% still credit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I'm reading a couple things. I was telling the pals earlier that if I was being honest, I would just say I read Twitter, The Atlantic, and my students' work, and that's it. And that's true. I mean, it's mostly what I read, and I feel my reading is slipping these days, or I find less time to read. And probably it's not less time. It's just more that when I'm on the bus or train, if I'm standing, I will read my phone instead of trying to fish a book out of my bag and trying to hold it between someone's shoulder blades or whatever. But I do read things here and there, and one thing that I want to talk about is Mr. Miracle by Tom King. This is a comic from DC Comics by Tom King and Mitch Gerads. Mentioned it on our old podcast before, but it's fantastic. It's the one comic that I look forward to the most these days, and probably I'm kind of going through a comics lull a bit right now, and Mr. Miracle is keeping me afloat. It's an excellent comic about depression and self-doubt, and you wouldn't think it because it's about a super-powered escape artist and alien worlds and alien gods. And within this context, it's a very funny but also quiet story about like suicide and depression. And there was issue number 4, I think it was. I read it in a bar in Boston on a Friday night.
What bar?
Deluxe. I was entranced by the ending to the point that I was bent over at the bar with my face on the comic reading it, and I had to like lift my head to turn the pages. I was like so engrossed in the panels because it felt so close to like my own thoughts and feelings. Like I've never read anything that close to what I feel before, and it was almost scary. And when I had to like lift my head up and look around the bar and like make sure that there wasn't people around me that were like sinister, because I felt that.
Deluxe is a very good drunkenly reading a comic book bar.
1,000%. They have Batman on the TV and it's dark and there's an Elvis statue. Also, in addition to that, there's a great comic that I wanted to talk about called Twisted Romance that came out. I guess it's coming out now weekly. It's a 4-issue miniseries. It's an anthology. This is Image Comics is putting this out. It's written by a number of people. Alex DeCampi is the sort of like main author / organizer. She's writing some pieces there and kind of like seems to be the kind of spiritual influence for the whole thing. But issue 1 was written by there was a story by Sarah Horrocks in there, and one by Megan Cubed, which is a great name. Megan, M-A-G-E-N Cubed. Love that name. And also drawn by someone named Katie Skelly. It's a weird kind of a romance comic, but like the dark side of romance. There was a story about vampires and a story about having a crush on someone who can't reciprocate that crush, and there was a story about being in love with your computer. All really cool, different stories, different styles of art, but really pretty. The vampire one was my favorite one for sure. I like the story the best. There was one about a photographer's assistant falling in love with a model who turns out to be asexual, and it was like, I didn't like the story as much, but I was happy to see a story about that in a comic, because it was a sort of a complicated romance story and allowed asexuality to be prominent. And you don't see that story very often, which is nice. You know, an asexual person sort of being treated in an equal and validating way, I thought was important. But also, it's fun to read. It feels dark in a way that things don't always feel in comics, and not a fake darkness of gritty murder and that kind of thing. It's just like, it feels dark in like a more emotional way, which is cool. So definitely read that. Twisted Romance, highly recommended. Along with Mr. Miracle, both of those are fantastic books to check out.
You said, would you just say that you're in a comic book lull?
Yeah.
When I was here a year ago,
yeah,
you said you were saying something about how all of your favorite comics were kind of getting you down, like you were feeling bad about comics lately. So yeah, that has stretched for over a year. Like, what's going on there?
I think part of it is that...
is it because the world is...
Well, yeah, I mean, not... I think it's not untrue. Part of it's the world's affecting things, but also it's the stories are being told. There's two things. One, a lot of the comic writers that I used to enjoy are now like having children and like starting families, and their stories are all about like families, and they're fine, but I just don't care about them.
You know this because you like follow their
lives? Yeah, Twitter helps to interactions. Right. Like, you know kind of what deals with people's lives. And so, but you can even tell the story. It's like all of a sudden, like, the Batman and Superman comics are all about their children and their families, and it's just happening over and over.
And that,
like,
makes you sad because your balls are wrong and barren.
Yeah. Can't write my balls. It's like, yeah, have a family. No, it's just like, okay, fine. And for other audiences, that's great. But for this audience, it's like, I just wanted to go on adventures. But also, part of the problem is that Image used to be kind of like the alternative to... It was mainstream publishing, mainstream comics, but it was weirder stories and different stuff, and they've hit a wall. Every story comes from Image, with exceptions like Twisted Romance, are these boring ass sci-fi stories. They're all the same, like murder mystery on a spaceship, murder mystery on a space station, murder mystery on another planet. Or it's like detective who's a werewolf, detective who's a vampire, detective who's a sea monster. Like, it's the same structures.
I don't know, this is something I've been kind of grappling with when it comes... I don't read a lot of new stuff anymore because I don't know if it's my age or what.
Yeah.
But half the time I'm like, I could do this new thing or I could do this old thing that I haven't done in 20 years and I know that I'm going to like.
You mean comics? Right?
I mean specifically books and video games.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Where like I could go pay $60 to try this new thing, or I can play this game that I haven't played in 10 years that I know I love, and I know that my next 40 hours are good, right?
Yeah.
Or I could go take a gamble on this book, or I could dig up Mysteries of Udolphos because I keep saying I want to reread that book, but it's 500 pages and I know it's going to take me a month, so might as well go reread that because I know I like it. And I find myself increasingly opting for, I don't know if it's nostalgia or just safety and comfort.
Yeah. Well,
when it comes to what I, you know, my time's limited is part of it.
Yeah. We are all sad old men.
Yeah.
And part of it is that it's like we're to that age where all of a sudden you've lost your edge a little bit, and you just want things that are reliable, and that's things you know, or things you don't know but come from a time period where, like, I mostly just listen to like music that I didn't listen to from the 80s and 90s now.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, I can discover these bands I never paid attention to and get into them, and it's great.
Rather than trying anything coming out today.
Absolutely.
Yep.
With comics, it's like that too, but it's also just, I think I'm, as an audience member, I'm at a step with what comics is doing, and I probably would feel more comfortable in the underground, but when I go there, I'm also not super satisfied all the time. I find underground comics to be sometimes pretty boring. Or interesting, but with no depth. And I just miss something experimental. That's why I will talk about Shade later in another podcast. But I like the comic because it provides depth, and it's not the same old thing that I've read before. I should say that the Young Animal books from DC are the most reliable these days. Doom Patrol, Shade, and some new stuff coming out later are things that I can get excited about because they are bright and four-colored, but also weird, which is kind of what I like. Yeah, I mean, it's cyclical, too. I think that things will turn around. And I'm still enjoying the hell out of, like, Batman, for instance. I still like that book. But it's just mostly I'm missing that sense of, like, 10 years ago and I was excited to go to the comic store every week. And it's just not, that's not the same. Okay, well, that's a podcast as well, I feel like.
Yeah.
Brick, why don't you give us the social media rundown?
All right, you can follow us on Twitter at YakBabies, YakBabies. Email us. If you want to email us, that'd be awesome. It's YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com.
You can call us at 817. No.
We can call us at Aaron's phone number. Just ask us on Twitter and we'll release it. You can follow our new section, Doxing Ourselves. That'll be fine. Upcoming podcast, we have a couple book club things. One that we talked about earlier was Tobias Wolff's Bullet in the Brain and Hunters in the Snow. So read those and then you can listen along. And if you have anything you want to add to that, you can email us too. And then we're happy to include that in our discussion, even though we'll probably have already discussed it by the time that you email us.
Oh, guaranteed.
But we'll still recognize you somehow. And I say that knowing full well that no one's emailing. Also, one of which Aaron just mentioned was Shade the Changing Girl. So we're going to be talking about that and Paper Girls, issues 1 and 2 of both of them.
Yeah. Two comics, one from Image, one from DC. First two issues available in a lot of places. There's trades, there's issues out there. Go check them out. They're all online.
This we talk about later, but this
it's a handsome hardcover.
This hardcover Paper Girl is pretty nice.
The design on Paper Girls is fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. That'll do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't say it.
Yak babies, yak it off.